please get on your feet and help me welcome Ellen Rohr. Yay!
So happy to be here. You know, every time I come, I say this feels like home. It's like summer camp to me. We come and I get to see my friends, and I just love you so much. Hey, Howard, don't take my picture. Howard and I are always like this, the two of us. Someone has a camera, and we're both like, hey. So, how many of you, is there anyone here who we haven't met yet? A couple of new folks. Hi. I'm glad you're here. And I'm like the aunt with the casserole. I come in and I just share some food, some knowledge, and I get supported by the Inner Circle team. But has Howard told you our story yet? He will in a minute. I'm going to wait till Howard comes up to share how Howard and I met. But I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version of my story, and then we're going to launch into some fun stuff today. Once upon a time, I married a plumber. Mom pop shop. Who knows about a kooky family business? Yeah, well, we fought. Number one reason, we didn't make any money. I figured out how to make money, and you know how? I came to rooms like this. I asked people. Randall, I was just talking about you. You get an invite to go to the great game of business. You just show up at their shop. You live right there. Why not? Right, you go impose yourself. I read the magazines, now the blogs, the podcasts, and I just learned how to make more money. And that's why I'm an expert. I wasn't anything fancy. I am the least likely person in the world to learn this. I'm a high D, even higher I, zero S and C at all. When I was working with my husband, I was resentful that I had to do the books. How come I have to do the books? Isn't this sexist? Why am I doing this? He's out there turning wrenches and we're arguing at 10 at night. So I had this inauspicious beginning to becoming a financial expert. But because I was desperate, because the pain of the current condition was so strong, I figured out my asset for my elbow and I am the better for it. So what happened is this really was the springboard to this amazing career, because once I figured it out, it was like, if I don't know it, how many other people out there don't know it? There's all these mom and pop shops, friends of mine. Are they struggling as much as I am? I'm going to go help them. And I just set out like on a personal mission. In fact, my personal mission is I believe that honorable, profitable business expands peace, prosperity, and freedom across the planet.
That's right.
So like I can get beyond that. And freedom, really, if you were to boil it down to one word, freedom is what I'm all about. I want to do what I want to do. Who's with me? Right? And financial freedom is part of it. It's not all of it. We're going to talk about money here in just a minute. But this is really where my journey went. And the reason I'm sharing my journey, and I want to get in a little bit more detail about this, is because it could be your journey. There's nothing extraordinary about my journey. What happened is I was at a point of pain where I didn't have any money. My husband and I were fighting, and I was over it. Who can relate to this? Yes. All right? So then I start exploring, well, who knows more than I do? And I started to read the trade magazines. And there was an article written by a guy named Frank Blau. He's about 110 years old right now, still bossy as ever. I love him so much. But he wrote an article, and it was called How Much Should a Contractor Charge Back in 1989? So I read this article, and this is what he said, which is pretty mind-boggling, and I'm glad you have note paper. He said to charge more than it costs. That always gets a laugh. Most of you have heard that. Charge more than it costs, which blew my mind, because how many of you have heard things like the going rate, what the market will bear, you don't understand what my competition is charging, and all of that, which he deemed nonsense. He said, Too bad. You got to charge more than it costs. But if you don't know how much it costs, then you have to figure that out. So you need to learn to read and use financial reports. Now, they didn't call this that when I was a kid, but I'm self-diagnosed dyslexic and ADD and have the attention span of a gnat, which you all know by now, for those of you who have met me. So I wasn't a likely person to dig into spreadsheets. Who can relate to this? But you know, if you want to win, get over whatever disability or rock is in your road. Is it workable? Like, don't we all have something? You know, and some people are going to be more burdened than others. Then you help them. And when you need a hand, you ask for it. But together, you can figure out what you need to know in this world. Would you agree? Right? If you made it to this room, you can. Right, so what I did is I wrote this guy a letter, and I said he was wrong because I went to college and I learned things about what the market will bear and how much the going rate is and everything. I wrote him this letter, and he called me up and he told me where my head was, which was in a dark place. Long story. But in other words, he busted me on my stinking thinking. Are you stuck on that? Do you want to believe that's true? Does that have to be true for you? Or do you want to get better? Do you want to get rich? Do you want to make money? And so I was humbled and laid low. And he taught me how to read and use financial reports. Took me under his wing, showed me his financials. Went line by line, like I've done with so many of you guys. Busted, what is that? Why is it a negative number? Do you know? Do you know where the number comes from? How come you don't know? Isn't this your money? Shouldn't you know? Ugh! But I figured it out. And I'm not the world's best at bookkeeping. I'm not the world's best at financial management. But what happened is I became good enough. Good enough to figure out how much we needed to charge. Good enough to know, based on the numbers, when we were losing and when we were winning and which numbers I should pay attention to. And I expanded my freedom. I started to make more money. And one of the things I did that made the biggest difference was, what do you think I'm going to say right now? I raise my prices. I keep raising them. They keep going up. They keep going up and up and up. I don't. If we don't get complaints in a while, I raise them again. So we just keep raising our prices. So in any event, that I just wanted to share a little bit about my journey. I got a couple of notes in here. Oh, okay. Then another thing that happened is I met a great accountant. Now, how many of you have great accountant, someone who's, okay, how many of you are wondering, maybe I don't? You're probably going to have to kiss a few frogs. You're probably going to have to upgrade your accounting person. And what happened with me is I just lucked out or was fortunate or divine intervention, I don't know, but the first accountant that I had at the time lived in a teepee with her dope-smoking husband, God bless him, and she was the one who said, I will help you. I'll help you fix your books. I'll help you clean up that mess. You pay attention. I've been waiting for you to get more involved. If I didn't have Brenda, I don't know that I would have continued with this career. I might have been too, see, just another person who's let me down, another blame I could do. But no, Brenda said you can do it. And she helped me learn to read and use financial reports. And then my sister Gail became my bookkeeper on the daily. She didn't graduate college. She's just a high C, a Virgo, likes things tidy. And my sister and I, for many, many years, worked on the accounting together, and then I started to help other people do what we were doing, which was basically, you know, fix it. Is this what you have for cash? No, let's make it right. Let's make an adjustment and let's move on to the next line. Accounts receivable. Is that what you have for accounts receivable? No. What should it be? And you adjust it and you make it right and you figure it out. Who's with me? Who's gone through this? Is it impossible? No. Is it tedious? Yeah. Why not? Okay. So then another person that made a big difference in my life is I'm going to jump through, like mostly other business owners like you, where we would just sit down and would share and would get vulnerable and would talk to each other about real things, would share resources, would help each other. I know how to fix that. Do you know how to fix this? And yes, we would. This is, again, the community that we have here is such a great place to utilize it. Then what started to happen, and this is the coolest thing ever, is that my clients started to get smarter than me. And they started to teach me stuff. Elise, you're the smartest business person I know now. You are just, it's absolutely amazing what you know. And I'm so impressed with you. You were never really a client except for in a room like this, but you picked it up and you ran with it and you adopted it. And I'm just so, so impressed. And there's so many of you in this room. Electa, where's Electa? The student has definitely become the teacher. With Electa, started a business, and now she's helping other folks. Is she supposed to be sitting there? She's not there, hearing me brag about her. In a minute, Howard will tell his story. You know, I throw a lot of seeds on the ground, but every now and then, one of them takes root. I mean, I'm going to keep throwing seeds out there, but when I see them take root, it's so cool. How many of you have people who you've mentored in your life who are now smarter and better than you in every way, and you couldn't be more proud of that? I mean, it's just so good. And then my partner, Jim, at Zoom Drain, I now work with Jim. He was one of my clients once upon a time. He's one of the savviest financial critics I've ever met. And I knew him when he didn't know his asset from his elbow, when his books were an absolute mess. And to watch him develop like this, now I've got a partner in my business who's so super smart about the money. And you know what else is cool? We got investors at our company. Oh, and they're young. I could be their mother or grandmother on a couple of them. They're all so smart. They've gone to Vanderbilt and Harvard and Yale, and they know all this stuff. And you know what's really, really cool? As smart as they are, as complicated as my financial world is now, as president of Zoom Drain, 44 locations, 2 corporate stores, intention of growing to 100 units in the next 18 months, all of these spreadsheets, all of these numbers are based on the few basic numbers I've been looking at all along. Who wants me to share what those are? Okay, we're going to do that. All right, so before we do, that's my story. Like, it's just like it keeps getting better and better, but the basics are the river that runs through all of it. And once you get the basics down when it comes to money, it's just going to serve you in so, so many ways. So I want you to do a little exercise with me, and this is how we're going to start. This is my notes. I don't have a PowerPoint or anything. Can you see this? Can you read it? Okay. All right. So, here's what I want you to do. I want you to, now you got to be really quiet for this to work. And I want to take your hands like this and go like this. Shh. Can you hear it? What's that sound?
Money.
I thought that would go over. All right. Well, what is money? What are we hearing? Shout it really loud.
Freedom, choice.
Resources. Energy. A vote of confidence.
Security.
Options. Money buys options. I love that. Okay, excellent. Okay, well, I Googled it. And here is a definition of money. Just one, but just like get even now, imagine. Is it the most important thing? No, but as Zig Ziglar says, it's right up there with oxygen. But still, like, what is it and what's the role that it plays? Money is a medium of exchange that is centralized, generally accepted, recognized, and facilitates transactions of goods and services. That's money. It's a medium of exchange for various goods and services in an economy. How about that? Let me ask you this question. What was the most important document written in 1776? I might argue that the most important document from 1776 is a book called Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith. Now, I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm just saying I might argue that when we look at the overall importance of the document, it might be up for grabs for that particular publication year. And Adam Smith was an interesting cat. Who's read this book? Who's now maybe intrigued to read it? Okay, Adam Smith is the one who coined this idea of the invisible hand of the market. And the central idea is that Adam Smith believed that growing prosperity was created for nations by an exchange of goods and services that was ruled by the invisible hand of the market, and what has come to be understood as free capitalism, which was better than before when people used to stockpile gold and tax their subjects, and they felt like there was a lot more limits to actual wealth in a country. But his concept, and this concept that really took off in the United States, was the idea of free capital markets. Now, if you read the book, he has some checks and balances in there. He does believe that we need regulations when people don't do the right thing. Can you imagine that that would ever happen? So, of course, that's where government comes in, and there's ways for government to play. But overall, there is this delicious, wonderful energy that comes from people who are freely trading with one another. And in fact, unless there is a free economy in a country, the people in that country will never experience freedom. Because there's only a few ways to distribute goods and services. Some of you have heard this before too, but let me remind you. There is war. We'll just go take resources. There's crime, and I'm not above it. If the only exchange of goods and services was a black market in my country, I would participate. Who gets that? All right, so there's crime. I'm not above it. And there's charity. That's where we deem to give goods and services to people who we feel are worthy in some way, shape, or form. And then there's government. And I think there's a place. I do. For roads, for schools, for combined resources. A franchise actually works that way. You guys give me some money, I'm going to use it for the common good, and then we discuss what that common good is and how we should spend that money. I think there's a role. But none of those ways are going to expand freedom like business, like a free exchange of goods and services. So creating a business that works is no small thing. And if you can do it, if there's an opportunity for you to create a successful business, then I would suggest in this room that you commit to it, that you decide that that's your responsibility and the direction that you want to go. Now, you don't have to. If you don't want to be a good financial steward, I tell you what, go work for someone else. Are you with me? If you're going to own a business, that is your stewardship. The money is on your watch. Fair enough? And it's a privilege to have that responsibility. It's a joy to have that responsibility. If you can and you are so moved, may I encourage you to commit to the successful operation of your business. Who's with me? Yeah. Are you loving that? Okay, give yourselves a round of applause. All right, so read the Wealth of Nations. It's a very mind-expanding book. And that the way money works is pretty interesting too. Now here's another thought about money. My personal definition, who said energy for money? Was that you? That's my favorite. It's just energy. It's just something. In fact, it's based on nothing. It's absolutely in its form a total illusion. Right? So we're gonna use currency. And ultimately, we're all going to use cryptocurrency. I don't know how it's going to wash out, but yes, that'll happen. But what's interesting is remember now that as of 1971, there's no gold standard. All of your belief, our belief in the importance of money is on a shared hallucination. A promise. A promise. The that it is actually worth something when in fact there's no there there. Who thinks that's just beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? That's enough for us to be able to exchange goods and services with a medium of energy that's neutral. See, money is neutral. Once upon a time, I lived in a cabin in Montana. That's a really fun story, yeah. And we traded chickens for things, which is not good for going to the movies. Like, you know, trade is fine, but money is neutral. You can use money for anything. How delicious. So that's a little bit of our story. So now this is going to be another exercise we're going to do. Are you ready? I'm going to need my helpers back with Michelle and Santi and Heather over there. Now I'm going to get really bossy, and I want you to follow the rules to make this work. Are you with me? Hey, Michelle, I will also, because I forgot to grab one, I will also need copies of that handout. But here's what's going to happen now. When these teammates set these documents on your table, they're going to put them specifically in order, and don't touch them. Just sit there with them for a minute. All right, do you know how to do this? Did you get schooled on how to set them out?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So what I'm going to look at is when it gets to my table, let them set them down, and I'll repeat this several times because you guys don't yet have them. But what you're going to be getting, I'm going to give you kind of a hint. You can't see this far, so it'll work. On one side, I've got a blank profit and loss and a blank balance sheet. And on the other side, I have them filled in. So leave them on the blank side up. That way. Leave them on the blank side up. Don't turn them over. You with me? Say yes.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, and we're going to explore the balance sheet and the profit and loss. Okay, so I'm going to, while they're doing that, thank you. Yeah, and you can, once you train someone, okay, here's another little U.S. history story that you guys will like. This is ripped from the headlines just because I got a minute while they pass these out. In Philadelphia, there is a national park called Valley Forge. Who's ever been to Valley Forge? Now, what's interesting about Valley Forge is that it was not a battlefield. It was an encampment. That's all that happened there, is that the British, the British took Philadelphia just as winter was upon them. And once upon a time, because it was hard to get horses and men through snow and winter, they just took break during the winter, during the Revolutionary War, so there they are. So the British have moved the local people out of their houses in Philadelphia, and they've occupied Philadelphia. And about 20 miles away from Philadelphia is Valley Forge, which is this place in the country where they are parking their troops to spend the winter. It's a winter encampment. So George Washington is in charge, Lafayette, Hamilton, other icons from the Revolutionary War are based there. And it's, as you probably already know, a brutal tale of survival. They don't have enough food. And interestingly, from a drain cleaning perspective, the number one killer of the people, the troops, and the families that traveled with the troops in Valley Forge were sewage-borne diseases like cholera and dysentery. Just saying. Killed more people during the Revolutionary War than even the guns did. So anyway, there they are, and there's all these malnourished, under-clothed people, and George Washington is responsible for getting these troops ready to fight the Revolutionary War in the spring. Now, U.S. history is complicated history, and I'm not going to get into every detail, but I am going to tell you this one, which you may not know. That over in France, Benjamin Franklin was trying to get money from the French and get the French to come into the war with them, which was the deciding factor in our victory, ultimately. But one other cool thing that happened over there is he's at a party. And this guy shows up, and his name is Frederick von Steuben. Who's heard of von Steuben? Oh, you're going to love this. Okay, so von Steuben shows up, and von Steuben is a mercenary. He's really a hired gun when it comes to fighting wars. He's from Prussia, and there's no war in Prussia right now, so he shows up in France, and he's looking for someone to hire him. Well, he's not even a general, but he talks to Benjamin Franklin, and Benjamin Franklin's going, I hear, like, these guys are telling me you're a really good tactician. You know something about fighting. And he's like, yeah, I do. And he says, well, tell me about yourself. And then he tells a story, and he kind of got fired from one thing, and he's kind of a hothead and everything else. And Benjamin Franklin says, listen, I'm going to help you create your resume. We're going to say you're a general, and we're going to ship you over to General Washington, who needs you, and you could help him train his troops. How does this sound? Doesn't that sound like Franklin? So, anyway, he shows up at Valley Forge, and here's an interesting statistic. He doesn't speak English. He speaks German and French. Well, it's helpful that Lafayette and Hamilton and a couple other guys, Lorenz, they speak French. But here's what he's in charge of now. Washington says, I need you. He says, I'll help you. He develops, catch this, he develops the manual for the U.S. Army on how to train, lay out, parade, and fight with soldiers. And it's called the Blue Book or something. Do I have any servicemen who could clarify that detail for me? There's... I didn't plan on telling the story. I would have looked that up. Do you know what it is? Yeah, he wrote it. So there he is. Von Steuben writes it in German and French, and it gets translated to English in these conditions with quill pens. This is how he does it. He gets 120 men out of the 10,000 that are there, and he trains them on some basic exercises. And the guys who can do the translating and the writing madly write out the manuals by hand every night. And those 120 men now train 120 more men. And in a period of 90 days, von Steuben trains 10,000 troops at Valley Forge, which then go on to defeat the British. Couple of things. When you tell me you can't find or train a couple of guys, I'm not interested. Wouldn't five people change your life for the better? Could you find and train five people? And wouldn't that double the size of your company potentially? Just saying. And keep in mind, they were so well trained that they did this exercise where they shot off their guns one at a time, 10,000 of them, and it sounds like pop, 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 in order. And it's such a difficult demonstration on the grounds, the parade ground, that it's rarely done. And that's how well trained these troops were. Okay, just saying. A little more. It was just while you were passing out the papers. Okay. All right, so now that you have your papers, we've got a blank balance sheet and we've got a blank profit and loss. Do you see that? Don't look on the other side. Okay. Now what I want you to do, you can work in groups, you can help each other. If someone has a pen, on the balance sheet, I've given you a few terms and I'm going to define them. Are you ready? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay, assets. Your assets. What are your assets? Who has a quick definition of what assets are? It's what you own. Yes, it's your stuff. It's what you have. Groovy, okay? Now let me define the terms on the balance sheet, and then I'm going to let you rock and roll with it. Okay, then it says total assets, so you can see there's a little space to fill out. And then the next section is liabilities and equity. What's a liability?
What you owe.
What you owe. Okay, easy peasy. That would be, I don't want to tell you. Okay, and then equity is what?
The difference.
It's the difference. It's technically what you own. So assets are what you have. Okay, liabilities are what you owe. And equity is what you own. It's the difference between assets and liabilities. So that's the balance sheet. Assets equals liabilities plus equity. Assets equals what you owe and then what you own. Does that make sense? Is this good information to know?
Yes.
Sure, it's your job to know. Okay, now take a minute, work in teams, and fill in the blanks for me a little bit. What are some missing items on that balance sheet? Now, as you do that, I'm going to tell you a little story. There's a guy named Ken Goodrich who works in our industry. Robin knows Ken Goodrich. How many millions of dollars are in his combined businesses these days? Gettle? 300 million? 400 million? Just sold his business, got investors, probably rolled up some cash, 451 million. Is that adorable? Anyway, what Ken told me is he took a class like this one day, and we were talking about the information that's in front of you. And what I just want to point out, and he's such a generous, nice guy, he found me not long ago. This is a guy who just sold his company for $451 million, and he just sat in a group session that I did maybe 20 years ago, and he said, I want to thank you because when we did these exercises, I didn't know what these words meant, and you didn't make me feel stupid about it. Is that the nicest thing? So I don't care if you know it or not. It's just a chance to help each other. Fair enough? Don't worry about feeling stupid. Don't worry about getting it wrong. Just do your best at your tables. Okay, rock and roll for a minute. I'll stop talking. I'm going to walk around. I'm going to go peek a little bit more, then we'll wrap up. What are you guys doing? Started. Okay, thanks, Christian. All right, here's the biggest question. Did anybody turn the sheet over?
No.
No, of course not. See, the invisible hand of the market. You did turn the sheet over? You need to wait in the car. It's all over. All right, let's go to the balance sheet, and I'm gonna get a little involvement. I'm gonna help you define a few words. All right, so first off, who looked on the internet? Went to their phone and got some help from the internet. The internet was there all along on your phones, and you could have done it. Don't make this hard. Okay, who pulled out their QuickBooks? Yeah, great. Why not? No, it's resources. This is what I look for. I look for the greatest effort to effect ratio. How little can I do to get the greatest effect? Who loves that? Absolutely. Who worked as a group?
Yes.
Great. Yeah. I never said you had to do it individually or make it hard. Just help each other out, right? That's easy. Work as a group. Who just abandoned ship and let somebody else do it for them? My general approach to most things. Okay, excellent. All right, so on assets, call out some assets. What do we have?
Cash
is an asset. Accounts receivable, which is a promise to pay cash. That's an asset. Excellent.
Machinery, equipment,
okay.
Prepaid.
Real estate. Prepaid assets, which is a little bit fancy pants. Good on you. That means I paid for assets, but we haven't used them yet. It's an accounting thing. That's okay. In accounting, there's like green circle stuff, super easy. There's a blue square, which is a medium, hard. And then there's black diamond. That was definitely a blue square, the prepaid asset. Okay, good, good. All right. Pop quiz. Who in the room put current assets? Anybody put a... Whoa, Greg, you did. All right, excellent. So inside the asset section, there are some subcategories. Current assets, go ahead and write it down, or have your friend that you're delegating to write it down. Current assets are assets that are cash or close to cash. Current assets are cash, savings, accounts receivable, because you know as soon as they pay, it'll be cash. Should be a current asset. And then inventory is often called a current asset because as soon as you sell the inventory, it turns into cash. So what would some examples, those are current assets, what would some examples of fixed assets be?
Building.
The building. We're not going to sell our fixed assets to pay payroll this week. So it's good to know what your current assets are because that's your hope that you'll be able to pay your bills. Are you with me? Say yes.
Yes.
Is this good information?
Yes.
Yeah. Shouldn't you know it? Yes. Is it hard? No, a little bit. Here's the thing. It's like vocabulary. If you don't speak Spanish and you're in a room of Spanish-speaking people, do you feel kind of dumb?
Yes.
Are you dumb?
No.
You just don't know the language. Are you with me? So a big part of accounting and bookkeeping is asking, what does this word mean? And have your bookkeeper or your accountant explain the word to you and don't be intimidated by it. Say yes. Okay, let's go to liabilities. What are some liabilities?
Accounts payable, credit cards.
Accounts payable, credit cards, leases. Yes, leases now are considered liabilities. That's a good one. Credit cards, loans, maybe the taxes we owe. Yeah, sales tax payable, taxes payable. Deferred revenue, again, fancy pants. What's happening at this table? This table is the A-plus table right here. Love it. Okay. Oh, okay. That's going to matter. Okay. Excellent. Okay. Any other liabilities?
Customer deposits.
Customer deposits. So they gave you the money. We really owe the work, so we have to park it there. Yes. Maybe. What if we didn't have the cash to pay the salary, like to the owner, but we don't want to forget about it, so we might put it under a liability. What if your brother-in-law loans you some cash? That'd be a liability. Now, so there's current liabilities. What's another subset of liabilities? Long-term. So instead of calling them fixed, they call them long-term. And then these are liabilities that might be, they're going to be due in a greater period of time than a year, technically. So current liabilities are going to be due this year, usually due in the next month or two. And then long-term liabilities would be like a building mortgage or building loan in business. Excellent. All right. Now, assets, what you have minus what you owe equals what you own. It's another way to rewrite this equation. So the difference between assets and liabilities is equity. What are some things we're going to find in the equity section?
Capital stock.
Capital stock. Yeah, when you first start your company, there's going to be some made-up stock number that we're going to have. When you sell your company, that's going to be a real number, which is interesting. Okay, good. What else have you got? Oh, retained earnings. This is getting black diamond. I love this table. Retained earnings is the sum total of profit and losses since the beginning of time in your company. Good number to know?
Yeah.
Isn't that cool? So good. Balance sheet never starts over. It's just a moment in time as of right now or whatever date you run it as to what the company has, what it owes, and what it owns. So good. Anything else in the equity section?
Shareholders
distribution or maybe shareholders investment. How many of you put money into your company? Yikes. Don't want to do that too much, but we might. And wouldn't it be nice if at some point we got it back? So it's good to keep track of that. Excellent. Comments, questions, concerns. Flip over. Oh, wait. Don't do that yet. Don't do it yet. Don't do flip over anything. You're already waiting in the car, so that's, we got to make sure. Let's go to the profit and loss. You ready? Okay. Now, income. Oh, let me go over this. This is another reason why accounting gets a little confusing. Income. What's another word for income?
Revenue.
And another?
Sales.
There's probably more. Now, when you think, what is income? I thought it was sales. I thought it was revenue. It's three words that mean the same thing. And though I've talked to accountants and there's obviously some differences between these things, it doesn't matter. It's never come up in my whole life, the difference between these things. So I don't care. Just know that those are three words that mean the same thing. So that's what you sell stuff for. Great. Cost of goods sold. What's another word for cost of goods sold? Cost of sales. Yep. What's another word for the actual term cost of goods sold? COGS. Sometimes it's called COGS and sometimes it's called COS, COS for cost of sales. Another expression is direct costs. Those costs that are directly variable with sales. So that means costs that go up or down depending on how much sales you have. As opposed to expenses. Now I'm going to skip gross profit for a second. Expenses can also be called overhead, operating expenses. No wonder you get confused. So yours might not look exactly like that, just saying. Now, income minus cost of goods sold equals gross profit when it's expressed as a dollar. When it's expressed as a percentage, it's called what? Let me ask that question again. Income minus cost of goods sold equals gross profit. See where it is on the form? It's called gross profit when it's a dollar amount. If I expressed that relationship as a percentage, it would be called what? Getting close. Gross margin. Gross margin. So gross profit is the dollar. Gross margin is the percentage. Isn't that good to know? It makes you sound so smart. Okay, then there's expenses. And then there's net operating income, which is weird. What's another word for that? No. Net operating income in QuickBooks is really, I heard it, profit. Why don't they just call it profit? I don't know. So this is part of the confusion. I pulled these numbers from QuickBooks. Okay, excellent. Now, given that, fill in some accounts. They're called accounts, those individual little buckets that you're going to put information in. Are you ready? Go. Work as a team. Use those hacks that I just gave you, and that'll be great. good to me. All right, who's having fun? Isn't this interesting? Isn't this good to know? Okay, I got a couple things to go over. Let's go, go, go. All right. On the profit and loss under income, what could you put under that section?
Sales.
Sales is another word for income, but some of you have busier income sections. Why? What's in there? Different types of sales. Different types of sales. So you might run your financials by class, or you might have additional accounts to show different types of sales. We do drain cleaning, and we do plumbing, and we do HVAC. I might have multiple accounts for sales there. I like to keep it thin, and I like to use classes, but I'm not going to get too deep today. Under the cost of goods sold section, let me define cost of goods sold for you. And this is going to go, where's Cody? Right there. This is I'm going to answer your question. Okay, so under the cost of goods sold section, here's the definition of a cost of goods sold. That if I make a sale, I incur the expense. If I don't make the sale, the expense doesn't happen. So they're variable expenses that go up or down with sales. So what's a very clear cost of goods sold? Elizabeth?
Your field labor.
Technically, if there's no work, we should do what? Send them home. Or get work and keep them busy. Are you with me? But that's a cost of goods sold, because technically, if there's no work to do, we shouldn't incur that expense, or we better watch that expense. It should go down, or we go find some work for them to do. Excellent. What's another cost of goods sold? I heard it. Begins with an M.
Materials.
So if I was in the business of selling T-shirts, the T-shirts that I purchased that I'm reselling would be a cost of goods sold. If I'm a plumber, the faucet would be a cost of goods sold materials. Are you with me so far? So in everybody's cost of goods sold, I would expect to see labor and materials. What's one more that's pretty common?
Fuel.
No on sales tax. Supplies and materials, same thing. Hang tight. Referral fees, I would, in your business, consider as a cost of goods sold. Why? It passes the test. It passes the test. If the sale doesn't happen, the referral fee doesn't happen.
Subcontractors.
Subcontractors is a really common one, because subcontractors, again, I want to pay attention to those. Now, think how good this is, just practically, for you guys from Schaefer. The cost of goods sold and the sales are the things you guys are managing day to day. What's happening with sales? What's the team doing? What materials are we using? What subs are happening? Those three are what you should pay attention to. The overhead expenses, you know what? Do you really need to be in every conversation about office supplies? Probably not. Maybe we'll have procedure and other people will handle it, but the managers of the department should pay attention to sales, labor, materials, and subs for sure. And maybe commissions if you have a referral, a robust referral department in your business. So good. Are you with me? Now, to your point, your accountant may argue for another expense, one that is variable for sales. And you had one, Cody. What was it?
Fuel.
Now, here's why I don't put fuel in cost of goods sold. Technically, yes, the more sales we have, the more the trucks run, the more fuel. It's a fine argument. But here's what I don't want my managers doing, wasting time talking about fuel when what's the decision to make? Is the truck empty? Fill the truck. Like, there's not a lot of conversation. Now, what you might do, and you'll do this with every other expense, is you should have a procedure for how to use the fuel card and hold them to it, or what? Fire them. Do you see where I'm going? That's operations. People aren't going to use the procedures. Maybe it's a training issue. Maybe they don't know how. But we give them the verbal warning, the written warning. We talk to them. We let them go if they're not going to use the fuel card properly. Am I right? Say yes.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So you'll have procedures for your expenses, but you're going to manage those people and those materials. You're going to have procedures for them too, but there's decisions to make on the daily. Do I buy more materials? Do I protect the materials? Did I keep track of them as they went from the job to the shop, etc.? So good. All right, now flip them over and see how you did. Go ahead. In fact, this is how this is built. This was pretty smart. If you're looking at the blank balance sheet and you flip over the blank profit and loss, you can look at them side by side. So make it so you look at both the example balance sheet that's empty and the example balance sheet that's filled out. See if there's any questions, any surprises. What do you got? I'm going to answer your question, and then your question. Okay, this is complicated. Oh, should I try it? I'm going to try it. Okay, so how many of you have ever heard the term double entry accounting? Ooh, getting a little black diamond. Consider this. If your balance sheet, assets equals liability, write this down, could be reworked to say debits equals credits. So we use debits and credits as the functional tool by which we make these accounts go up and down. And for every transaction that you do, when you write a check to pay for something, there's two pieces of that transaction. All right. If I were to write a check to pay down my credit card, there would be a credit to cash because that would bring the cash down, and a debit to the liability because it would reduce the liability. That's double entry accounting. Who, like, that was completely lost on them? It's fine. You don't have to raise your hand. But I'll tell you what happened, and we just had this conversation at this table. Once upon a time, and in my book, Where Did the Money Go? You have it available in the Inner Circle resources. I wrote this book because once I figured out how debits and credits worked, the whole mystery of the financial reports dissolved in front of me. That there is a functionality in the accounting system that happens that causes these accounts to stay in balance. So what you were talking about is you bought a truck. Okay, so let's say we bought a truck for $5,000, $150,000, and we got a loan for $150,000. Debit to the asset of truck, credit to the loan of $150,000. There's two separate things there. There's the truck with a balance, and then there's the liability. And over time, I'm going to write checks. Cash will go down, the liability will go down a portion, and the expense of interest will go up a portion. Does that start to make sense to you? So it's a more complicated transaction based in double entry accounting. If that just teases you enough to learn more about it, my work is done there. Fair enough? Okay, all right. You had a question over here, too. What do you got? You would just have it up in that section. You'd need another row. You'd add another account. So this is an incomplete list. This is an incomplete list. It's just a sample. That's a really good question. So I said subcontractors should be up in cost of goods sold. And we only have labor and materials. You just add a line. If you don't use subcontractors, don't need the line. If you don't have referral partners, don't put the line. If you do, put the line. But that's where you can expand this. So your chart of accounts looks probably different from this one. Yeah, yes, sir?
My question is, how affect your analysis? Because at the end, you are putting it under the total cost of goods sold.
I'm not sure of your question.
The debit and credit.
I don't think so. Ask it again. Yeah.
You always include the labor right there, yes?
Yes, in cost of goods sold.
You have to include also the subcontractors
I just didn't list it. Yeah, I just didn't put it there. Yeah, I'm missing other things too. Like, this is just a sample. And so for your business, you're going to customize this, correct? Make sense? Good. Michael, what do you got?
We get a contract and we do an all-inclusive. We provide toilet paper, bags, and everything. Would that be a cost of good or would that be an expense?
I don't know. I'd ask my accountant about it. You know what I mean? I'd sit side by side. So
I've gotten mixed reviews from one to the other.
Then I'd make a decision.
Okay.
And I'd track it. Here's what else I do is I like to keep it to as few categories as possible, because the more accounts I have, those things are called accounts, or they're buckets into which you put information, the more accounts I have, the more likely they are to have mistakes and the more confusing it gets. So I like a chart of accounts that for the profit and loss for any company, including mine, it's not more than a page and a half. Right? Because I can always drill down into QuickBooks and see more.
You could drill down with less versus you got to start finding it.
Yeah, I like to see mostly loaves of bread, and then I can dig in for the slices of bread. Make sense? Okay, who else has got a question?
Ellen, I have two things I put in my cost of sales.
Okay.
One is credit card fees. If I don't sell, I don't have a credit card fee.
Okay. Okay, those are two legit cost of goods sold because they're variable, his franchise fee and his credit card fees. However, the reason why I don't do it is purely mechanical, and I keep pointing to this table, to Team Schaefer, because there's no decision to be made about credit card fees or franchise fees. So I just put them down below. But now, you see what I'm saying? All I want, when I show my team members my profit and loss, I might only show them to the gross profit line because that's what they're concerned with. But it's optional and it's style. Does that make sense? But here's the thing. Now, if your chart of accounts is different from someone else in your franchise and you say, well, my gross profit or my gross margin is X, you got to make sure that their construct is the same or we're not comparing apples and oranges. And this will happen to you guys too. An HVAC contractor will say, well, I operate at a gross margin of 75%. And someone else will say, ours is like 43. But if you go and you look at their construct, their accounts, it's not apples to oranges. So always question. Are you with me on that? Okay.
Just one more thing.
Okay.
You said you should charge more than the cost.
Yeah. I'm adding them one place or the other. I'm either adding them in cost of goods sold or I'm adding them in overhead, and my prices cover everything. So it's just a shell game. Yep, I'll get it in overhead or I'll get it in cost of goods, but the customer is going to pay. Does that make sense? All right, now, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds. This was my intention of this conversation. Who learned something? Okay, what did you learn? What was the point of this exercise? Know your numbers. What are the resources available to you? Understand? Yeah, but how are you going to learn it? What are some resources?
Pod on Thursday at 10 o'clock.
Pod on Thursdays at 10 o'clock. What else? Where are you going to go? Yeah, my books. They're available. Where else are you going to get information? QuickBooks, from the internet, from each other. Like, go find it. It's not a mystery. Accounting hasn't changed one jot since monk Luca Pacioli devised the accounting equation in the 1400s. It's the same in every country, in every dollar, in every language. It's a universal language, and it is a key to your freedom. Are you with me? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay, now I have Howard to come up, and I have a little exercise we're going to play before we wrap up. We have about 7 minutes. Do you want? I was going to give you more time, and here I am.
Oh, I have a microphone. Okay.
You have to turn on your mic.
What?
What would you like for me to do? Right
get up
now?
Here. Let's give it up for Howard Partridge. I just got away. It got away from me, Howard. I was just
that's
having
right.
fun. I know.
We're always so having fun when you're on the stage.
Okay.
So, by the way, you don't have to go to Google. You don't have to go to ChatGPT. You don't have to go anywhere because all of her stuff is on our site.
There you
so
go.
So if you're in the inner circle, you have all of Ellen Rohr's stuff. Okay? Did y'all hear what I just said?
Yeah!
All right. Now listen, when I first met Ellen, I was actually writing for one of the trade magazines. And we had great systems. We had great customer service and all that kind of stuff. We're doing $2.5 million a year. The problem was we were barely getting by financially. So how do you do that? How do you do $2.5 million a year and lose money? It's easy. You just spend more than $2.5 million, right? And so I had all this debt built up, and we had good stuff. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we had a great company, great customer service, great marketing. We're bringing in a lot of money, but there was a lot of money going out the door. And I'm reading my magazine that I write for, and all of a sudden, this Ellen Rohr chick shows up in my magazine. I'm like, who is this? I don't like her. Sherry didn't like me the first time she met. I don't like her because she's getting in my sandbox here, you know? And so she's the keynote at the conference that I always speak at. And I had, you know, a bunch of my buddies with me and sat on the back row. And I'm like, okay, who's this woman? And I'm on the back row. And she rolls out on the stage. And she says, who has StoryBrand called, or Marketing Made Simple calls, a one-liner? Who has an elevator pitch? Who has a, you know? And so she's getting the audience engagement, and she's giving out her DVD when she was on PBS and all this. This guy stands up and gives his pitch, and she goes, oh, I like that. Where'd you learn that? And he goes, I learned that from a guy named Howard Partridge. And she goes, well, I don't know who this Howard Partridge guy is, but I really like him. How many of you know that all of a sudden I liked her? Right? And so she offered this financial package. Now, keep in mind, I had all this debt. In fact, I had $40,000 on my Platinum American Express that I couldn't pay on time. I called up and I said, hey, I just want to let you know, I know this is due tomorrow, but I'm not going to be able to pay it. And they said, oh, yes, you will. And I said, do you know something that I don't know? And said, well, we'll talk tomorrow. I said, good. You know, a miracle happened. They figured out how to put me on payments for 29% interest. I mean, wow. So anyway, before that day, Ellen offers this package, and so I walk up and I give her my American Express Platinum card for her biggest package, and she looks at the card and she's like, oh, you're that guy? I said, yeah. So we implemented her systems, not only got my company debt-free, I got debt-free, and then, of course, I didn't really have phenomenal products going like we do now. And so today I'm debt free, and I feel a lot like Stephanie, that, you know, sometimes I can't believe how much money we're making. And it's all because of this young lady right
Not
here.
Not true. It's you.
So,
and I'm so
I know,
happy
but
about it.
Listen, you had a system.
Yep.
That system is available to you. So if you haven't joined up yet in the inner circle, do it today. You'll never regret it. You have all of Ellen's resources. We've got her financial blast on there. And some of you are actually working with Ellen on
Yay!
Thursdays.
Love that. Our pod on Thursdays. Woohoo!
So anyway, that's how we met. She came into my company, and I figured out that we just weren't charging enough. Our labor rate was too high, so we implemented a compensation program like you guys learned about yesterday. We raised our prices.
You upgraded your bookkeeping team and your accounting.
Right.
Yeah.
So we increased the investment. Never look back. So be sure to get on and get Ellen's resources. Thank you for doing this today. Aww. You got one more thing for them?
I got one more thing for them. Okay. Also, just so you know, like how much we love each other. That was the first time I'm going to cry. I always cry. That was the first time I'd ever sold anything from stage. I didn't want to do it. I just was completely, you know, nervous and anxious about it. And Howard came up to the front of the line and bought the whole package. He was the first sale I ever made as a speaker. So how much do I love you? It was just such a momentous day.
So check this out. So she starts Zoom Drain, and you have how many locations?
We have 44 locations now.
And how much? What's the revenue?
Like 57 million is what we are.
From zero to 57 million in franchise sales.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Yeah. And we're just getting started. An emerging brand.
We did a mastermind in Hawaii, and she said, look, I got to run my franchise, but I don't want to leave the rest of my list behind. And you're the only person I trust to take care of that list. And so we started facilitating your coaching.
I first came to you and said, just hire me. Just hire me.
I don't know
if this franchise thing is going to work out. Just hire me.
That's true. That is true. And I said, you're asking me for a job.
She said, I'm like, 100%.
Will you hire me?
Yeah.
So I said, look, sit next to me at dinner tonight. We'll talk about it. And this is what we came up with. So our organization is the exclusive coaching platform for the one and only amazing Ellen Roy.
That's right. This is where I come. Thank you so much.
Yay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, so like ant with a casserole. So I do have an exercise. Are we breaking?
Right after your exercise.
We're going to break. Okay. Yeah. So here's what you got to do. This is going to take less than a minute. Pull out your wallets. Pull out your wallets. If you have your wallet, pull your wallet out. Is this so hard? Come on. Okay, pull out your wallet and take whatever cash you have. Now, if you don't have a lot of cash, that's okay, because it's going to get better here in just a minute. And I want you to face your bills. Make them all go the same way. And just love on the money that you have right now. Just be a good steward. Like if you're going to be nice and tidy in your work dealings, shouldn't you be kind to your money? Who knows this trick, right? This is a nice little hack to be good with your money. Okay, now I want you to take the smallest bill you have, and it's up to you as to whether or not you want to participate. But I want you to take that bill, could be a $1 bill, and at the break, I want you to give it to someone with a compliment and let's pass the money around. How do you feel about that? All right, so that's your exercise. Sort your money. Be respectful of your money. Thank divine providence for the money that you have. And then find a small bill and pass it along with a compliment. If you don't have any small bills or you don't have any money and someone gives you one, what are you going to do? You're going to say, thank you. That's right. You're going to say thank you. All right, that's what I have for you today. I love you so much. Mwah.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ellen. Thank you.